This episode of Section D was first broadcast on the 13th of August 2013 on Monocle 24. Section D is brought to you in association with Lexus. Hello and welcome to part two of this special edition of Section D, looking at the Turkish design scene and the architecture community in a nation booming from construction. Coming up today, we hear from the thinkers who have charted the legacy of urban design in Istanbul, through Henri Prost, Adnan Menderes to present day.
Contemporary architectural historiography blames Menderes as the person who was responsible for the destruction of the historic character of Istanbul.
And we'll sit down with the new director of Istanbul's 2014 Design Biennale, Deniz Orva, to hear what challenges lie ahead for her and the team.
Design was always important, I think, for Turkey and especially for Istanbul, but we may not have found the right way to show it or to talk about it.
All that plus a lot more, all here on Section D with me, Ala John, on Monocle 24. Last week on part one of Section D's Istanbul special, we looked at how urban design and architecture were at the heart of the recent Gezi Park protests in the country. And we also visited Yasada, the island off the coast of Istanbul, threatened with property development, and which was once home to a special military court that sentenced Turkey's first elected Prime Minister, Adnan Menderes, to death. This week, we take a look at two key figures in the history of Istanbul's urban design. Henri Prost, the French city planner, who among other things built Gezi Park, and Adnan Menderes, Turkey's prime minister sentenced to death on Yasada for his legacy of architecture and urban design that changed the face of Istanbul forever. This report from Caleb Lauer.
For almost five centuries, Istanbul was the capital of the Ottoman Empire. When Ankara became the capital of the new republic, founded in 1923, Istanbul was at first given little attention, as Turkey's founders directed much of their energy and budget into building up a new capital. But not for long. Istanbul was simply too important. In 1936, the government hired Henri Prost to be Istanbul's chief planner. Prost had already studied in Istanbul and had helped design Paris and many North African and French Mediterranean cities. His legacy is still debated today. Murat Gül, Associate Professor of Architecture at TOBE University of Economics and Technology in Ankara, is an expert on the urban history of Istanbul. He gave me a tour of Aksaray in Istanbul, a major junction where Prost's plans for Istanbul can be appreciated, beside what came before and what came after. It may not surprise you that one centerpiece of Prost's urban vision was the car.
We are now in Aksaray. If you look at the left-hand side, you can see Gazi Mustafa Kemal Boulevard, which starts from Yenikapı up to Aksaray, where we are here now. It's originally planned by a French engineer, André Oric, after a big fire in Aksaray, 1911. That road, which is approximately 50 meters wide, started to be constructed in the dying years of the Ottoman Empire, completed with the pavement in the very early days of the Republic and named after Mustafa Kemal as Gazi Boulevard. It was the first major thoroughfare in modern sense opened in Istanbul with a huge wideness, 50 meter. And then if you go turn the right hand side, you can see the Atatürk Boulevard. And Prost continued Oric's vision and extended today's Atatürk Boulevard from Aksaray to Ümraniye on the southern shores of the Golden Horn. And this was the main avenue slicing the historical peninsula of Istanbul into two parts, west and east.
When Henri Prost came in the 1930s to work as Istanbul's chief planner, the Turkish Republic was still young. After the Ottoman Empire had been dissolved after World War I, Mustafa Kemal Atatürk and his colleagues were determined to modernize the new republic. İpek Akpınar is a professor of architecture at Istanbul Technical University and is an authority on Istanbul's urban history.
He applied modern planning principles, which we know from continental Europe. But when they were applied in Turkey, they gain local meanings. They gain ideological local meanings. So then he inserted 18 parks, large parks, and they somehow they created a built environment facilitating women going out of their closed domestic environment. So actually it was the parks have become spaces or physical spaces, physical arenas of the cultural and educational ideology of the Yan state for men and women to be out together.
The faces of Turkish girls and women are hidden, and they live in virtual slavery until Ataturk unveils them by decree. Now divorced from his wife, he takes pleasure in the company of emancipated women and insists that all Turkish women adopt Western clothes, gives them equal rights under the law after abolishing polygamy, and opens to women all the trades and all the professions.
He had a respect, of course, to the Ottoman monuments, and he wanted to create open areas within the proximity of those big mosques. And also he was trying to emphasize the Greek heritage or the Roman heritage of Istanbul too. But of course they cannot deny, and they didn't, the Ottoman past. They had to keep that delicate balance between the secularization and also the history of the country.
The two aspects of Prost's career in Istanbul, his association with the early Republican regime, and a perceived, though never demonstrated, preference for Istanbul's Greek and Roman heritage over its Ottoman past, fuel criticisms of Prost to this day. Jean-François Perus is the director of the French Institute for Anatolian Studies. He has written extensively on Prost and urban history in Turkey.
Il est encore, hein?
Prost was accused, and still is, of not respecting the Ottoman heritage. However, I don't think this is the case at all. This is someone who observed the city, who made a very in-depth diagnosis, and we even have 8 volumes of notes and plans that he took during that time to prove this. He was a very informed man who had a lot of admiration for Istanbul in all its components. He thought that we had to open the city and its avenues to the breeze and the sun. And for that, you had to sacrifice some monuments and some portions of the ancient fabric of a city.
Prost demolished an Ottoman barracks on Taksim Square in 1940 and built Gezi Park, the flagship park meant to project the new republic's ideology.
We should also keep in mind that a very limited number of works proposed by Prost had a chance to be implemented during his time. And it could be a little bit speculative, but I can say that if Prost's plan were implemented fully, the result was much more dramatic in terms of its impact on the historical character of the city than what Menderes did. In a sense, Menderes's project was more modest than Prost's whole idea.
Adnan Menderes was Turkey's first democratically elected prime minister. Elected in 1950, he was deposed in 1960 by a coup d'etat, tried by the army on the island of Yasa'ada, and hanged.
Dün gece yarısından itibaren bütün Türkiye'de deniz, hava, kara Türk silahlı kuvvetleri el ele vererek.
He was a populist, happy to use religion as a political tool, and intensely devoted to the urban development of Istanbul. Out with the old, Prost lost his job. The new government struck a committee to reformulate Istanbul's urban plan. It was the era of the Marshall Plan, and there was American road money to be had.
This program, known also as the Marshall Plan, is designed to afford eligible nations that margin of help in credit and materials which they need to bring their overall economy back to health.
They criticized Prost a lot, but at the end, what they proposed was pretty much consistent with what Prost proposed, actually.
Menderes's premier focus was roads. Despite only 900 cars on the streets of mid-century Istanbul, the small pedestrian streets meant jams at every major junction. Menderes picked up where the early Republican roadworks had left off.
If you go a little bit further, you can see two large avenues. On the left-hand side, you can see Millet Street, which was opened by Menderes during the 1950s urban operations. And on the right-hand side, you can see the largest street ever built in Istanbul with 70 meters wide, the Vatan Street. Today it's called Adnan Menderes Boulevard. We have a very detailed description of the works intended to be done, carried out. All these roads including the Vatan and Millet Street, and the two littoral avenues encircling the historical peninsula along the shores of the Marmara Sea and the Golden Horn were also included in 1839 development policy. In a sense, what Menderes did in the 1950s was quite consistent with the proposals prepared before him. That's why Aksaray is important, because here we are, you can see all these major proposals, realized proposals, both in the late Ottoman period, early Republican period, and the Democrat Party era in the 1950s.
But to create these huge boulevards, whole neighborhoods were cleared, facilitated by law changes Menderes pushed through Parliament. In fact, the issue of proper reparations would come up at Menderes's Yasa'ada trial.
Bu yalan haberlere inanılmamasını ve hatta bunları yayanların alakalılara ve vazifelilere...
Ottoman identity was extremely important for the Menderes governance. So they wanted to make the preservation for all Ottoman monuments. But when you look to the chart, to the list of the demolished buildings, a large number of mosques, large number of religious madrasas were also demolished in the name of opening roads. He became extremely powerful. He became extremely totalitarian. He applied violent censorship against newspapers. He got the journalist arrested.
Menderes did not stray far from Prost's original plans. Even during his Yasa'ada trial, he used his allegiance to Prost's plans as part of his defense. It's ironic given the scorn that Menderes's cohorts had heaped on Prost a decade earlier. It is also ironic that current Prime Minister Recep Tayyip Erdogan, who has proposed plans for Istanbul that, if realized, will rival Menderes's impact on the city, invokes Menderes's name as a democratic martyr for liberty, while simultaneously finding time, like the legion of conservative critics before him, to criticize Prost.
Non, c'est une question importante, mais alors là, c'est un tout autre registre.
It's an important question. This is because Erdogan has fashioned Menderes as a figure of liberty. He wants to create a museum in Yasa'ada, where Menderes was judged in 1961. He also wants to make an island of liberty. And in Erdogan's reading of recent Turkish political history, he champions three heroes of liberty: Menderes, Turgut Özal, and himself. So he's in a way inscribing himself into this anti-republican continuity as a figure who stands for the people. This is quite funny, because sociologically there is a huge difference between Menderes and Erdogan, as they don't come from the same social backgrounds. Menderes came from a large landed family, but politically they share many similarities, and Erdogan wants to position himself as a victim of the military and of the Republicans. Therefore, his view of political history puts him in the same boat as Menderes.
Especially since the 2011 election, Prime Minister Erdogan has proposed a series of massive changes to the city's shape. A third bridge over the Bosphorus, a new airport, a new city to go along with the airport, and a shipping canal between the Black Sea and the Sea of Marmara.
Contemporary architectural historiography blames Menderes as the person who was responsible for the destruction of the historic character of Istanbul, basically. I am just summarizing. But when you look at the previous attempts, starting from the early 19th century up to early 20th century and beyond, what we can see is that all these attempts were very much consistent. If they were realized, it could be the third stage after Menderes and Dalan and then Erdogan. But if the Canal Istanbul is opening, or the third airport, creating a satellite city, these would also create a huge impact on the morphology of the city, urban structure of the city.
Like many cities, Istanbul's urban design has long been the site of ideological contests. As contestants, Prost, Menderes, Erdogan, and others are significant and fascinating, all the more so because the connections among them are still so relevant today. But cities, almost by definition, are crowded places, and focusing on individuals alone, however powerful, can obscure as much as reveal. To say this with numbers, in 1923, when the Republic was founded, the population of Istanbul was about 500,000. In 1950, when Prost lost his job and Menderes was elected, the population was about 1,000,000. Today, it's 15 million. For Monocle, in Istanbul, I'm Caleb Lauer.
Coming up, I'll be finding out about the government request to include Ottoman and Seljuk themes in new developments. And I'll sit down with the new director of Istanbul's 2014 Design Biennale, Deniz Over.
You're listening to Section D on Monocle 24, our weekly program on the best in design, architecture, graphics, and fashion. Section D is brought to you by Lexus. Lexus, creating a new chapter in amazing design, technology, and driving.
Welcome back. And for those of you just joining us, you're listening to a special Istanbul edition of Section D with me, Alad John, here on Monocle 24. Before the break, you heard part of Istanbul's historical legacy through the prism of Henri Prost's drive for European modernism in the wake of the Ottoman Empire and the birth of the Turkish Republic. But what is the new focus of urban design in the nation? I wanted to find out if the proposed development of the Ottoman-themed shopping mall on Gezi Park was symbolic of greater trends in government-led construction. Chari Kanva, regional director for architecture firm Perkins & Will, joined me to reflect on his experience working as an architect consultant on big government-led projects like the upcoming International Finance Centre. We met in Istinye Park, which, despite the name, is actually a shopping mall.
Last 5 to 6 years, government has strategic projects in Turkey, especially large-scale projects, master plans, large airport projects, revitalization projects, and government mandates and government requests all these projects to happen by 2023, which is the 100th year of Turkey being republic. And Prime Minister has a goal to make all, especially some of these projects, ready by 2023. So these projects are the third airport, Istanbul Canal Project, Istanbul Financial Center, revitalization projects in different districts in Turkey, but especially in Istanbul, based on earthquake, non-stable urban areas, and also healthcare and hospital, large hospital complexes. So out of these projects, government start to come up with a fresh master plan, changing rules and regulations in a good way to be able to create more livable areas. More than livable areas, they also want to bring a notion that Turkey has a huge architectural history in the past, which we call Seljuklu and Ottoman architecture, which led the world around 500-600 years and created its own style and own design power. Most of it disappeared between 1930s to 80s, and we have developed places which are not really people friendly, which it used to be, chaotic and not applicable to the city, to its own landscape and such. To remember these influences. And basically what are these influences? In a scale, in a large scale development, real estate development, can be courtyards, terraces, gardens, gate concept, colonnades, arcades, frame in a frame concept, which bring building to a human scale.
A focus on the government's part to include Ottoman or Seljuk themes or design, it's not a mandate, but it's a request. Can you describe how that works?
And also, you know, the way that it works in Turkey, there's a private investors, they can do whatever they want to do, but there are also government-owned land that, you know, most countries it's been called PPP, but in Turkey it works a little bit differently, but in a similar concept. So in these projects, government would love to see, to apply and implement some of these elements, some of these architectural nuances for good. It's always creating more green, it's always creating more courtyards, it's always creating new spacious areas for people. Right now it's all about buildings and there's no space for people. It's government's wish to have space for people as well. You know, once they give a break, once they get out of work, to create places where people will enjoy it more.
Can you give any concrete examples of where the government's wish to have open spaces is actually realized? Because in Istanbul at the moment, there's a serious, suspicious lack of green spaces and space for people to go after work and relax.
There is green space in Istanbul, but it's not integrated into the city. That's a problem. Now, the question is how we're going to integrate the green space into the city more and more. And Taksim is a good example, putting all the traffic below grade and creating a park at the top of it for people's usage only. The future project that will have these influences will be Istanbul Financial Center.
You say they request the use of Ottoman themes or Seljuk themes. How do they do that? What designs do you rely on to harken back to Ottoman architecture?
It's not the Ottoman architecture that they ask for. It's really the influences from the Ottoman architecture. When you really assess and analyze what it was, like we did for a long time, we realize that the scale is always friendly with human. So more you get close to building, you're part of the building. And more you walk far away from the building doesn't bother you with the height and all that. So how did they do it? How we can apply and implement into the design is more bringing the elements. So more bringing the green. I'm not saying like sustainable. Yes, absolutely more sustainable, but the green element in as part of the building or scale that will not bother people. So it's less the style of architecture, it's more the elements that's been used for the architecture. That's a very red thin line. So you know, any architect, any developer really has to study what it is instead of just jumping into conclusion, because I mean, personally, the idea, what I believe, is not to create the old. It's just bring the influence and the good from old and integrate into the new.
Charlie Canva of Perkins & Will talking to me in Istanbul's İstinye Park. Istanbul's Şişhane neighbourhood is a microcosm of unlikely bedfellows. The city's design and artisan heritage and a burgeoning gentrification as brought home by the hotels, chic cafes and new developments under construction, the old and the new. The new caters to those tourists keen to peruse the music shops and galleries and the Istanbulites who work in the city's growing creative industries. The old is embodied by a community of metal and wood artisan workers that grew with the introduction of electricity to the city, tending to the needs of residents and businesses and the passing maritime traders. A warren of workshops whose noise penetrates the sound of the streets is a design community under threat from the changing tide in Istanbul.
I start the project because there is some vision to remove the craftsmen from the city center, from Şişhane, to outside of the city. I was working in the district, so I know the network of the craftsmen and its importance of the network, because it is very important for the city, for the designer, architects, you know, local needs and creating. So I tried to make visible this process and this network. So I started the Made in Şişhane project. It's a visibility project, or more than visibility, a safeguarding project.
Azla Engin is an Istanbul architect and campaigner. She leads me on a tour of the Şişhane neighbourhood of the city, winding through its cramped streets, describing an artisan community under threat from a changing focus in the city. It's the subject of a commemorative work that celebrates the centuries-old worker community made in Şişhane. So the district is an area of Istanbul with a huge heritage, a very long-lasting history of design and production, a kind of artisan centre to the city. Can you describe the significance of this area of Istanbul?
It's the mostly lighting district, but lighting is very open to different materials and different workshop and crafts need. So there are metal workshop, lampshade workshop, and acrylic and wooden workshops around. So 100 year old district we are mentioning about, this kind of district, it's long history, not easy to produce again.
So you can introduce me to some of the engineers, some of the artisan workers here in the neighborhood.
And be careful, it's dark.
Merhaba.
Artem Aharon is an artisan worker who has run his wood and metal workshop from this back street of Shoshana for over 40 years. He represents a community that has provided handcrafted designs for Istanbul residents, local businesses, and boats that dock by the Bosphorus shore in need of something repaired. With Azlaz translator, Artem describes his work.
Esasında her türlü işte uzmanız. Çünkü 45 senelik bir atelier.
There is a 45 years old workshop atelier, and we specialize in everything.
Ama en büyük uzman konum denizcilik.
But my main specialist part focus to boat.
Yok, karma karışık yani akla gelmiyor. Büyük şey yani.
Very dark.
Yeah.
Up the stairs again.
Antik teknoloji yani eski antik.
The old şey. Technology. He covered, discovered the old technology and he produced again.
Artem proudly displays machines handed to him by metalwork masters now dead, dependent on skills that, like the metalwork community in Shoshana itself, are in danger of becoming extinct.
Elektrik no, bak böyle.
There's no electric and it...
Bu böyle dönüyor, bak böyle dönüyor. Bu da böyle dönüyor, bu
so it works böyle. On a pedal system, you have to...
Like that, so with hand and foot together, it's yeah. Difficult, not easy.
Bir daha Türkiye'ye gelirsen bunda çalışırsın, çalıştıracağım bunu, eksiği yok.
Okay, next time if you come to Turkey, you can work here if you want.
Azla begins our tour again. Now we're off to meet Ali Çındık, who specializes in metal lighting designs, the product the Shoshana artisan community is famous for since electricity became commonly used in the city over a century ago.
So there are a workshop here. We close this passage.
Like Artem Aharon, Ali Çındık is an old man whose slight frame belies a life of tough and technical metal design work, with skills that are passed down through generations from masters to their apprentices.
Okay, it's, they are working the metal part and this is the mold.
So it's
okay,
a room full to the brim with metal parts which he's created and lampshades.
Exactly.
Circular parts, mini light bulb holders. Another tradition celebrated by Ali is the time allowed to enjoy a communal tea.
Two times in a day, in half past 10 and half past 3 or 3 o'clock, he's preparing the tea. And the neighbors from the hotel, from these apartments which we pass now, and the passage, and also the other craftsmen come.
And they share tea together.
Yeah, exactly.
Can you ask him how many years he has been in this part of Istanbul?
88'den beri bu sokaktayım. 1988.
He is in this street from 1988. Before, yani ondan önce?
72'den beri.
Ama neredeydin?
69'da başladım mesela.
He start another street in this Shoshana again in 69. And but he come in 88 diyor. Yani buraya niye geldin?
Ya işte buralar yani piyasası olduğu için mecbur kalıyoruz buraya. Başka yere gidemiyoruz yani. Bu piyasa biliyorsunuz.
İlk başladığında da böyleydi.
Tabii ilk başladığım yani. Bu.
As we finish our tea, Ali tells us how after over 40 years as part of the Shoshana community, he now plans to move from the area, thanks in no small part to the economic drivers of gentrification.
Bu çalışıyor ses çıkıyor. Şu fark ses çıkmıyor da büyük iş yapınca mesela bunları yapınca daha değişik işler yapınca.
When he work in the machine, it's make a sounds. Mm. So the hotels doesn't like the sounds around. So the newcomers, you know, gentrifier doesn't like the sounds. Okay. So they complained from him. Owner of the building want to take more, okay, because this area is gentrified area. If he go from this place, the owner can give 2,000 euro or something.
As told by Ali's story, this Shoshana microcosm of Istanbul's design heritage competes with the change brought in by urban development. It seems the balance between this heritage and construction-based gentrification has not yet been found. And as this show goes to air, Ali Çındık has since moved from his workshop in the Shoshana neighbourhood. Still to come in part two, I sit down with the new director of the city's 2014 Design Biennale, Deniz Over. We pay tribute to one internationally recognised Turkish export.
And Erdem Akan takes us on a tour of his studio in the Levent neighbourhood. Now, crossing from the more typically designer-occupied streets of Shoshane to the business-like concourses of Levent, we pay tribute to a local industrial designer, Erdem Akan, and his studio for the Boxer brand. Early one morning, Erdem gave the Section D team a chance to find out what processes lie behind his company's output and the role the city plays as both a constraint and an inspiration for the brand.
We are kind of a new center of Istanbul. Actually, Istanbul is no center at all, because I mean, I think it's just Istanbul looks to me like coming together lots of villages together, and then they create their own interests and centers. But I mean, to be more frankly speaking, that this part is the Levant, is the kind of a heart of the new Istanbul. We are actually working most of the time at the intersection of styling and also kind of a technology and engineering. So in all of our projects, there's kind of an intersection. So basically we got three, four different services that we are dealing with. Either we make a concept or innovation for our customers in terms of the products, or the second thing is we work for them in terms of the eco design. We are working with a partner called PE International. They are based in Germany, and then they doing all the stuff for us in terms of the green engineering and other things. So as a life cycle assessments and others. So it's more than greenwashing, it's just real stuff. And the third thing is that we are working for our clients is the brand architecture, where we are not the architects, but we do the spaces for them. We create the atmosphere and the ambience, and then we can do it from the all these three-dimensional spatial things to the packaging, and also to the identity of the menus in terms of the graphics and the logos and brands, everything. I personally use just a pen and paper. I even don't like this 3D modeling. I know how to use it, but I mean, I'm not using personally. So I really like sketching. There are mostly two things that I do. I make sometimes the free sketches for ideas. So I just create some spaces, okay? So, and then I use some colors also to understand, okay? To visualize. For me, the process is like this. So I most of the times, I mean, for this more artistic one, I don't know what I'm drawing, okay? And then I see something. So there is actually a conversation between my brain and also my eye. So I just, I see that one, and then I say, okay, I can, maybe I should make it like this. And then, so it's kind of a development process. So, and then I see it, and then I draw the next one, so in a better way, or in a, let's say, more detailed way. Normally I listen to the, I mean, three kinds of music. One of them is the jazz music. I like the, I mean, hard bop things like from the 50s, 60s, and so on. Miles Davis I like most of the time. For me, the influences is the city itself. So as a designer, I'm when I'm by myself in an artistic looking way, and then in this approach, mostly I try to digest the city. All these sounds that I'm hearing, all these spaces I'm seeing, all this chaos I see. So this is what I'm trying to reflect as Erdem Akan.
Miles Davis's All Blues, as chosen by the host of our selected studio visit this week, Erdem Akan. We'll be back after this short break to pay tribute to the Turkish cymbals that have carved out a place in the pantheon of iconic musical instruments.
You're listening to Section D on Monocle 24, our weekly program on the best in design, architecture, graphics, and fashion. Section D is brought to you by Lexus. Lexus, creating a new chapter in amazing design, technology, and driving.
This is Section D on Monocle 24. Welcome back. For guitar enthusiasts, it may be the Les Paul. The violin, perhaps the Stradivarius. For fans of percussion, you'd be hard-pressed to find more iconic brands of cymbal design than Istanbul's Zildjian or Sabian. Whether to punctuate or propel a passage, cymbals are an integral part of rhythm the world over, and one of the hometowns of the modern cymbal is Istanbul. Caleb Lauer headed out to the Shishane neighbourhood to find out how the tradition of cymbal design is still alive and well.
Cymbals. That's cymbals with a C. What would a drum roll be without that finishing crash? They are a mainstay of percussion traditions around the world, from rock to jazz. To reggae and to Chinese opera. The type of cymbal that dominates today's modern drum set can be traced back here to Istanbul and to one family in particular, the Zildjian family. The patriarchs of this cymbal dynasty began making the instruments in the 17th century. They eventually left for the New World, where two of their companies, Zildjian and Sabian, would grow to dominate the market. But a tradition of cymbal making lives on in Istanbul, as a list of the world's other well-known manufacturers suggest. Companies such as Bosphorus, Istanbul, Aegean, Anatolian, Dirl, Smyrna, Turkish, and Crescent. Many of Istanbul's music shops are here on Galipdedi Street, close to the Galata Tower. Here I met Torab Meclisi, a percussionist who has been designing cymbals for more than 15 years and now heads his own company, V Classic Cymbals.
So is it all drum studios too? Yeah. Or is it like, is there guitar players?
Yeah, guitar.
The first band I started was in 88, was a blues band.
As influences, Torab lists the great jazz drummer Art Blakey, and Mitch Mitchell, who played with Jimi Hendrix.
At the same time, I had a hard rock band in high school called the King Wizard. It was the first official band. You know, we went to out of city for gigs or something. You know. I had a lot of cymbals when I was also a child. I bought my first cymbal set. It was an old K Zildjian set. I bought it for $350, you know. That times it was cheap. After I started playing a lot and making money, I had a huge set.
Torab eventually started working as a quality controller for the cymbal company Turkish.
I went to their warehouse and checked the cymbals and, you know, take the bad ones out, and then made my first design for them. Actually, I made my first design for myself, but they decide to make it as a production. They're still doing that. There's five types of cymbals, you know, crash, ride, hi-hat, china, and splash.
So Torab gives me a basic tutorial in the components of cymbal design. A note on the terminology. A bell, that you'll hear Torab mention, is the center part of the cymbal, around where the cymbal gets hung from its stand.
Bell size, bell type. Also, there's a type, shape of bell. You can change the shape of bell as well. And also the polishing and the lathing style. Smooth lathing. If you do a smooth lathing on ride, you will get less overtone, less fundamental bass. Bell affects the sustain. You have smaller bell, less sustain. The edge of bell is also very important. You see the edges, all comes smooth. Shape is very important. Shape gives the pitch. More rounded cymbal, more high pitch. Flatter cymbal, lower pitch. Any material you take a paper, and you, when you bend it and hit it, you know, you can see the same thing happens. This ride, this is a prototype I made myself. Normally my ride has a hammered bell like this, you know. So this is a non-hammered bell with a little bit smaller bell. We're using 25 tin with 75 copper. So more tin gives more flexibility and less unwanted sustain or overtones. There's a balance, you know. If you put 30% tin, cymbal breaks. So copper gives it also the strength and flexibility. Tin gives maybe brightness and musicality. And this is my latest design. This is a jingle splash. Oh, yeah. It's a little bit costly. I'm using phosphor bronze jingles on that. Yeah. Not a standard nickel.
And what are they attached with? This this pin here. Is it a
it's a
phosphorus pin as well?
No, it's a brass. There's endless options on cymbals. Time is everything, you know? It's like marriage, you know? If you give your time, everything will be better. But if you want to make everything fast, it will be a hamburger style. You know?
Or perhaps a different food analogy?
It's like making a real Italian pizza or Pizza Hut. Eh?
One more?
Making bread is the same.
Drumming does make one hungry, but before I went out in search of a snack, I told Torob that I've always loved the combination of the hi-hat and the ride cymbal, and I asked him for a sample to play us out. Here's a taste. For Monocle, in Istanbul, I'm Caleb Lauer.
You're listening to Section D with me, Ala John, on Monocle 24. As we've documented over the last two special editions of Section D, Istanbul is a city that reflects some of the changes evident in modern Turkey. It's a city in the midst of flux, and a space where design in all its forms is growing and gaining recognition. Celebrating some of this excitement is the Istanbul Foundation for Culture and Arts, who in 2012 launched the city's first design biennale. In light of the changes taking place in the city, I was eager to find out what next year's design biennale would have in store. I met with the new director of the event, Deniz Ova, in her Shishane office.
I think in the last 10 or 15 years, we had an upcoming scene or a vibrating scene. I mean, design was always important, I think, for Turkey and especially for Istanbul, but we may not have found the right way to show it or to talk about it, to discuss about design. And I think with the Design Biennial now, we are creating a new platform where we have the opportunity to come together and discuss and see and experience and show to other people or to exchange about all design fields.
So what is the aim then? To promote Turkish designers or to raise awareness?
To raise awareness. Promotion is not the aim. Of course, we like to work with Turkish designers. We like to find out more about them, to find new designers and see how they're working. But the biennial is not a fair, it's not a commercial event to show or expose Turkish designers. It's just a new platform where we work with a curator, come up with a theme, a conceptual framework, and work in the design field around this conceptual framework. And design is not only product design, design is everything for us. It's architecture, urban design, it's graphic design, fashion design, social design, new media, everything that can be related with design, and then to see how do they work with each other or how do they interact, do they interact even, or are they just separate fields. That's one approach to the Design Biennial.
You've appointed Zoe Ryan. First of all, can we discuss what you would like to see from Zoe Ryan? And then afterwards, I'd like to try and get a feel for what you will be approaching in terms of subject matter in the Design Biennale in 2014. So first, Zoe.
I think we can see everything. The field is so open, and working with each time with a new curator gives us new opportunities and new ways to explore design. I think what we will see with Zoe is she might call it as bringing design back. Since the last biennial was in a direction more showing architecture, urban design, also focusing on product design, but there were some design fields that were not, I don't want to say missing, but lightly shown, like graphic design or fashion design. So it might be that we're more going in the design direction with the next biennial. And Zoe, I think she's just such an open person that will be able to show everything. In her work, she has done different design shows, so she's been working on different design fields specifically and not only going in one way. So I think she's a good choice to show a little bit more, to go deeper into the scene, to see more about design, what about design and what is design.
Looking at Istanbul then at the moment, in terms of approaching 2014, it's still a while away. It's a very interesting moment at the moment across the fields that you mentioned there, so architecture, urban planning, design. Do you foresee that you'll be reflecting some of the social issues that we see in the streets of Istanbul?
Well, I cannot say actually. I mean, it's obviously an exciting moment. There is a change. There is a lot in the air. But as you said, we're talking about October to December 2014. So I'm sure it will be in one way or the other touching all these issues that are going on right now, but I cannot tell for sure that there will be something. And at the end, I mean, the curator, Zoe, she'll be working on a conceptual framework and coming up with a theme. And if there are designers or projects working with that theme, then it's there. But if it's not talking to this issue, the designers or the project that are selected, that might not be in the exhibition. But I'm sure since this is a burning issue and the design scene was talking about it for more than 1 year now, more than 5 years, let's say, this change is going on for a while, but there is an outburst right now.
So there have been changes in the design scene over the last few years. Can you try and describe how the perception of design in Turkey has changed in the last decade, say?
The general perception about design is design item is something expensive I cannot afford, or something that only rich people can have in their houses or work with design. So it was more a perception about things, about objects, items. But at the same time, if we talk about design, we talk about architecture and urban planning, so, or urban design, let's say, or social design at the same time. This issue is more in the heads of the people right now. It's not only about talking about ugly buildings or nice buildings or having nice districts or creating nice surroundings. It's also now more in the heads of the people in the sense of what is this design or this design planning doing to us as people? How do we live with design in terms of architecture, urban design, urban planning, and what does it to us socially, and how do we talk to each other?
You say it's in the hands of the people. It's quite an interesting idea. Do you really believe that? It's everyone I've spoken to, architects and urban planners, they are the people who are obviously involved in these matters, and they're very, very interested in the subject matter. But the people who live in these buildings or who may be moved out when a private investor takes over the land, say for a new construction, they're not so aware of their rights.
Yeah, I didn't say it's in the hand of the people. I mean, they're discussing about it. So this is also a new way of thinking. So not only accepting what is going on, but discussing and thinking about it and trying to do something about it maybe. But it's definitely not in the hand of the people, that's for sure. That's what we have seen in the last month especially.
Could you describe some of the challenges you face as the new director, both to preserve the legacy of the first and taking it forward to the second and maybe third, however many you choose to stay on for?
Well, preserve the legacy of the first one, that's of course a challenge. And then there is a huge expectation of the biennial now, because for the first one, it was really challenging because you create something new and you want to be accepted and to work with it and the people to come and to see and discuss about it. And I think they've done a good job. But at the end, nobody really knew what is going to be created and how a design biennial will be. So they have shown something really good. So now we have to do better. The second one is always the most difficult one, I think. And then moving on forward, creating the strong identity about the design bienal will be really important. And having really roots in the scene and being connected to the industry and giving really new platforms and being also very progressive and then open to students to give them new views on design feels we really have a big challenge to overcome.
The new director of the 2014 Design Biennale, Denisova, talking to me in the final report for our show. Over these two special editions of Section D, we've endeavoured to shine a light on an architecture and design community in a nation undergoing aesthetic, infrastructural and economic change. My thanks to Kayla Blauer, Alexandra de Kramer and Holly Fisher for her patience and delightful production. You can contact me, Ala John, at awj@monocle.com if you have any comments about our two Turkey specials or about Section D in general. Now, playing you out is a classic from 1974. This is Çamalım by Akin Koray. Thank you for listening and goodbye.
Şen olasın ürgü, dumanım tütmez. Şen olasın ürgü, dumanım tütmez. Kıratım acemi.